Today's show is being brought to you by contributors at Patreon. Go to patreon.com/theeducationgame to support the show, and thanks. Hey gamers, this is Matt, and today we've got a great interview, one that continues our efforts to help you learn how to become your child's head coach. Now remember, it is your job to actively build and execute your child's learning plan. Why? Because your child's school can't do it. They won't do it. School was built for a completely different time, a time when grades were more important than actual learning, when what you knew mattered, but not what you could do with what you know. That matters now. So these podcasts are meant to create nausea in the listeners, particularly the parents who watch their child take state-mandated tests and assignments. You should feel nauseous because that means your child's school is preparing you for 1985 and not 2035, where curiosity, creativity, problem-solving, and character are going to matter so much more than ever before. So with that happy introduction, let's get into our podcast. This is Matt with The Education Game. Hey guys, welcome to The Education Game. We have Mikkel Thorup on the line today. One of the most interesting individuals I've had a chance to meet with in this journey in education. And I got to tell you, parents, if you have a child who is struggling in any way, who is ADHD, who is not fitting into the model, that rigid model of school, you really got to listen to this show. Mikkel is going to really share us a vision around what life could be like for your child if you understand how to adjust their learning approach and let the child actually begin to lead more. So with that introduction, Mikkel runs, organization?
So I run a podcast called The Expat Money Show. I have a book called Expat Secrets and a private group called Expat Money Forum, expatmoneyforum.com. So lots of stuff you could say.
Yeah, and we'll definitely get into all that. I just blanked on the name of it. Very successful stuff. But we want to start, Mikkel, like we do with most shows, is we start with this question. Tell us your learning journey. And I know it's interesting. So parents, buckle up on this one. All right. Mikkel, give us your learning journey.
Sure, of course. I mean, I'm happy to do so. And first of all, thank you very much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. And I hope today to be able to inspire and maybe guide and teach through my experiences about my journey. So
awesome.
What happened to me is probably a little bit different than any of the people you've had on your show before. So when I was in grade 3, I was actually diagnosed with a learning disability. And what happened was the teacher brought me out of class and they sat me down in a little room and the principal was there and a resource teacher or maybe the substitute teacher, I can't remember exactly, but there was about 3 or 4 adults. And they sat me down and they said, Mikkel, something doesn't work quite right in your brain. And what we want to do is we want to send you to a special school for special boys. And that's what they did.
And you remember this conversation, huh?
I remember this very well. It's like, you know, it's kind of funny. You have moments from your childhood that stand out so clearly.
Yes.
Like, I remember everything. I remember the room was like a little box. And I remember being scared. And I remember just not understanding. And really, like, not having anyone on my side. It wasn't like, you know, my mom was there holding my hand or something.
But so you were alone in that conversation?
Yeah, it was 3 adults. But I mean, I'm sure the teachers and the principal thought that what they were doing is being warm and helpful and stuff like that.
Okay.
Sorry, I found it very one-sided.
Sure.
Yeah, of course.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Okay.
How old are you in grade 3? Like, I can't even remember, but I know for sure it was grade 3.
8 years
old. Exactly what's, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So
okay,
every day for 3 years, I got on a little white bus and I took a little white bus across town. And I went to this quote unquote special school. Only problem, Matt, was it wasn't a special school. It was a regular school with a special class. So there was me and 11 other students. And as you mentioned, like ADHD and all of these names that I didn't understand and learning disability and all these things, that was our little group. So I'm sure you can imagine what happened. I would get in a lot of fights. I got picked on. I got made fun of, you know, a lot of problems there. Now, I'm no victim, and I don't like to say that, you know, poor Mikkel, woe is me, by any means. I mean, I gave as good as I got, and I fought back, and, you know, I stood up for myself. But
wait,
was a pretty horrendous experience.
Yeah, but were these kids the 11 in your class, or were this the larger school that
No. It was the 12 of us who were getting the crap beaten out of us by the other several hundred kids.
Yes,
imagine, you know, you have two or three grade fours, two or three grade fives, two or three grade sixes, and, you know, then this one special ed class in the middle of that, in the middle of the normal school, on the other side of town that I had to get transported to. So they took me out of my neighborhood school, the area that I had known, across town, with, and none of the kids knew each other in my class because we all had all come there. And it was interesting. It was the same classroom for grades 4, 5, and 6. So we had grade 4s, grade 5s, grade 6s, all in one class. All of us had some type of quote-unquote learning disability.
Yeah. All right, so...
Which, by the way, was a form of dyslexia, which we know these days is really not a big deal.
Like, yeah, super common, right? Everybody...
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so you had this... this diagnosed disability, you were sent to this special, it was really a special class within a larger school. I can imagine the dynamics there being really horrific. And I do actually have a story, maybe we'll get to it, about my own brother. Very, very similar situation as what you described. Okay, so you were there for 3 years, then what happened?
So at the end of 3 years, so this school went from, I think, like grade 1 to grade 6. Then grade 7, I had the opportunity to go back to my neighborhood school.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, this is going to be so amazing. You know, my friends will have missed me so much. Like, I saw a couple people during the summers and stuff like that. But 95% of them hadn't seen me in 3 years.
Right. So this is back to your neighborhood school.
Exactly. So all the kids that I had gone kindergarten 1, 2, 3 with and then disappeared for 3 years. And I mean, 3 years when you're 8 years old is a... pretty large chunk of time.
It's a lifetime, yeah.
And I honestly, Matt, I thought they were going to be so stoked to see me. I thought, you know, I was so happy to go back just to a regular school because I got made fun of and picked on every single day for 3 years. Mm. I swear to God, I came home crying. Every single week, I came home crying from school.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, this is going to be amazing. Everyone's going to be so happy to see me. I'll be so I'm so excited. And you can probably once again imagine what happened. You know, kids, you know, they kind of remember me, but kind of didn't remember me.
Sure.
And
3 years,
kind of gossiping and whispering, oh, I know him. He went to some retard school.
That's right.
1980s, you know, kids are very sensitive, very politically correct. You know, this is... this is how it was.
Yeah.
And so I went through grade 7 and 8 and I started to fail. I just didn't like school. I just knew there was something wrong. So I stopped going.
Yeah.
And then I started to fail and then they'd send me to summer school and then I'd fail summer school. And then somehow they'd pull some strings and they'd push me through and I'd get into the next year and I'd get 51% or 50% and a half or
just enough
just to get through. Somehow I got into high school and then it continued. I was failing in high school but basically, long story short, I mean, I stopped going to school at 12 and by 15 years old, I had officially dropped out.
Okay,
I no longer went to school. I never went to college. I never did anything after that.
All right, let me pause you. So parents, let me just kind of, reflect some of what we just went through, right? So Mikkel's experience was horrific, clearly. But there's a spectrum of experiences. I think Mikkel, you're probably on the, you know, on the tail end, the bottom end of that spectrum, but there are a bunch of kids that are really close to you. I'd be willing to bet if you go to any summer school program, you're going to find a lot of Mikkels and a lot of kids that maybe didn't get beat on as much, but felt like they were stupid, were intimidated, all sorts of things. And they're just eking by like Mikkel did. again, I've got a story about my brother that we won't have time probably to get into, but you're talking exactly about his experience. So when you started to disengage, like actively, you were 12 years old. Yeah. And then, and it accelerated until you hit 15. And at that point, what, you just said, I'm done? What was going on with your parents at this point?
So I think that at 12 years old, I knew from about 8 years old that I hated school and this was not something I wanted to continue with.
Yes.
I knew that there was something wrong. I didn't know how to articulate that. Yes. I mean, I couldn't explain to my parents or to the teachers, but my behavior reflected that.
Right.
You know, I wasn't interested. I didn't want to do this. I fought everything. You know, I would pretend. Honestly, I lied. Honestly, I lied. That's kind of a weird sentence, but I mean, that's what I did. I pretended how to read. I pretended to do my work. I pretended to know the answers. You know, I didn't know. I didn't understand because I felt so stupid when other people knew and understood something. When you're asked to read in front of 31 other kids a book, I mean, like...
Yeah. So there again, what you're describing, you know, you gotta, if parents think about this for a moment, half the kids in any classroom are strong in one subject and weak in a subject. So every kid that is weak in that subject, they have the chance of coming away feeling like Mikhail. And that is, they feel like they can't keep up. There's something broken about them, as opposed to the system. Like, why would you ever put a kid on, you know, in the front of the room to read a book or put them on the spot like that when it's clearly that they're struggling? They need a different type of support. So Mikhail was actively disengaging. You didn't like school from 8 years old. Your behavior demonstrated your dislike of school. And again, parents, like really critically look at your child. Look at how they're behaving. Do they really enjoy school? And actually, let me be clear, because this is something I'd like to ask you too about, Mikhail. There is learning, and then there is the social aspects of school. These are two different things. A lot of kids like the social, but they don't like the learning. And so they will continue to go to school. In fact, I talked to a parent about this last week, as a 13-year-old, loves the social, struggling mightily in school, but wants to continue to go despite the pain that he feels. Anyway, so tell me again what your parents were thinking and saying to you during this time.
So my parents really had no idea what to do. Once again, this was the 1980s. They trusted the teachers and the educational system, the state-run school, when they were told that your child's brain doesn't work right. There's something wrong there. There is a problem. And this has been communicated to me. Your son is attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity, dyslexic. We didn't even know what it was at first.
Yeah.
I was considered gifted with a learning disability. So I have an extremely high IQ. I tested at 147 IQ. So there was never any question that I was stupid, but I did have problems with reading, writing, and spelling.
Sure.
Now I felt stupid. I felt like I don't understand. If I'm so smart, then why does everybody else get this and I don't get this?
Yeah.
And here, I'll give you another little piece that is quite personal to me, and I don't talk about on most interviews. I've been interviewed literally hundreds of times, and I don't get into. What I didn't understand was when I was told, oh, you're a genius, you're so smart, you have a high IQ, over and over and over again, I didn't understand why. If this is the case, why do I have to try? Like, if I'm so smart, why am I trying? I should get this stuff instantly, you know? I didn't. So therefore, it was like this weird mixture where you're told your brain doesn't work right and you can't read properly. They wouldn't even send me to any classes. I'm Canadian. So normally Canadians, we study two languages. We study English as a first language and French as a second language. Mm-hmm. They never put me in a French class because they told me you have so many problems with English that we don't want to add additional stress to you. Hmm. So as a grown-up, I was taught basically that You cannot learn a second language because you have so much problems with English. Your brain doesn't understand one language, which is complete baloney, by the way, because now I speak fluent Spanish and I'm self-taught. I'm an autodidact and I'm a polymath. I mean, I've traveled all over the world. I've been to more than 100 countries and learning languages. So if I had this learning disability,
right,
how was I able to do these things?
So again, so you're tipping your hand a little bit here. I want the parents that are listening to understand how far you came from this point when you were told that you're broken, essentially. They're saying you're broken, and that's why you're not doing well.
You're broken, but you're special.
At the same time, right?
I really didn't understand.
But I got to get back to this parent question, right?
Tell me.
The parents are listening to the show. They're going to be freaking out if they have Mikkel in their home. Right. Yeah. So your parents were certainly freaking out at this moment in this 12 through 15 year period of time. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And it reflected in everything. OK, you talked about socialization, about making friends. Well, it's very difficult to make friends when everybody calls you a retard every day you go to school. So even kids that would be nice and associate with me, they would then get made fun of.
Right.
So therefore, they're incentivized not to. So the only people that I could make friends with were the people in my group or the other outcasts, the other people in my class.
Yeah.
So that was difficult. Now, my parents would be able to see it in everything if I played sports or any of the other things. Now, you talk about what I was good at. I was very good at art or anything creative or something with my hands to build something. Those were the things that I would enjoy. And I could spend hours doing those types of things.
Yeah. Okay. So, so your parents then, they just threw up their hands? I don't know what to do with this guy?
I would say more or less. I mean, my parents love me. Don't get me wrong. My parents love me. They always wanted the best for me. Always, they thought they were doing the best, and they did the best with the information they had at hand at that moment. That's why I think the program that you're doing, Matt, is so important, because I think parents always are going to be doing the best they can with the information.
Yeah.
But so much things from government-run schools, it's really one-sided. So by you bringing an alternative, showing other options out there, I think it's really powerful. That's why I really congratulate you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, so for as a parent, what I would be saying is I don't know what to do. Again, every parent loves their child. That is a working assumption that I have never seen questioned. Frankly, actually, I've never seen it not be proven true. But I know what I would do. I would be pushing on you. I would be trying to remove all the things that you enjoy in order to focus on the things that you weren't good at. I would be doubling down on the school. So if the school says that you're not keeping up, then home becomes a second school, right? I would do all the things that kind of textbook wise in terms of pushing your child to proceed and quote unquote succeed. But now let's move forward. So at 15, you were inspired to do something, to travel. Like, when did that happen?
Okay, so the timeline. So 12 years old, I stopped going to school. And when I say 15, I officially dropped out. It means I never went back to another class from the age of 15 onwards.
Yep.
Now, from that 3-year period, I was going 20% of the time or 15% of the time. I mean, I would show up. Like, how many classes in a semester? I have no idea. Maybe 40 or something like that.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, for a high school, for one class, how many you needed to attend? I was going a fraction of that. You know, I would be weeks and I wouldn't go there. I started working at 12 years old to earn money to do the things that I wanted to do. And then I started working full time when I was about 15 or 16.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I was 17, I had an opportunity to travel internationally. And I went to Ireland, England, and Wales. And I went with my father. I used to do martial arts at very high levels. This was one of the things, talking about doing things with my hand and being creative. For me, martial arts was a massive part of my life, and it was a rock and some stability. So from the ages of 6 till 17, I was in karate nonstop, and I'd say it was one of the most positive influences in my entire life, and showed me and taught me so much about respect and personal responsibility and hard work and determination. I think if I didn't have that, it would have been
catastrophic.
Well,
right?
Much worse. Yeah.
And so it's interesting because as you're saying this, I can imagine me saying to my son or daughter, hey, listen, if you don't do better in school, you won't get access to karate. I can imagine saying that. But for your saying,
I was very fortunate my parents never did that. I mean, they never turned around and tried to punish me because I wasn't doing well. Because
That's huge.
I don't know. Like, yeah, I'm trying to think back to all of these types of things. No, taking away karate was never a threat for me.
Okay.
I think that they always saw that it was a positive influence on my life. And probably a lifeline for me.
It sounds like it was.
Everything else was falling apart.
Yeah, it sounds like it was. So again, lessons for parents that are listening. Those things that the child is really passionate about, we can use those as a lever in order to get the child to do the things that we want them to do. But I want you to recognize the risk, right? So if karate had been taken away from Mikhail, we would probably not be talking here. He wouldn't be a New York Times bestseller. He wouldn't have an incredible business and incredible story that we still haven't even gotten to yet because it just goes up from here. So you started, now let's get to it. So at 17, you had a chance to travel. And what did that do in terms of changing your outlook on life and your vision for your future?
So when I was growing up, my father had always told me that travel was the greatest thing he ever did with his life. And we were not a very affluent family growing up by any means. So we never had a real opportunity to travel when I was a child. But like I said, I did extremely well in martial arts and I had an invitation to compete internationally in Ireland. So I joined Team Canada and we did fundraising and charity and things like this. And we raised the money and we sent me to Ireland. And we tagged on to that a extended trip, me and my father. And we got to travel all through these different countries and cultures and see new things. Now, Ireland, England, and Wales is pretty similar to Canada. However, for me, it was a completely new experience. And I started to meet really, really interesting people. Yeah. And I started to get like the bug, you know, the bug for traveling. And I went back to my hometown and I continued to work and I saved up money. And about a year or two later, I decided I was going to take a one-way flight and I went to the UK. And I spent one-way flight to UK. I like my one-way flights. And I spent 3 months in Western Europe. I was in, UK, France, Holland, Belgium, Spain, and then basically ran out of money. And then I went down to North Africa. And then at about 18 or 19, probably 19 years old, I spent 2 months in Morocco and actually went to Algeria on a camel, took 3 days and went across the Sahara Desert on a camel then came back. And
So you really went deep into this travel thing. But how did you pay for that? Like you said you ran out of money. You just worked in country?
Oh, I started to get really low on funds. And in North Africa, the cost of living is a fraction of what it is in Western Europe.
Yeah.
Maybe one quarter or one fifth of the cost. Maybe even back then it was one tenth of the cost. We're talking about 20 some odd years ago now I did this trip. So it was interesting because internet existed when this happened. However, it wasn't like it was today. No. We didn't have smartphones. We didn't have video conferencing or Skype or anything like that.
Right.
I mean, it just didn't. I don't even think laptops were around. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. I don't know, 20 years ago? Certainly what it isn't like it was today. No tablet.
I don't think so.
So, I mean, I had to ask people and ask for directions and figure things out and make friends and build relationships and become very self-reliant to be able to do these types of trips.
Okay, let me pause you there. I'm taking some notes here. So what I'm hearing is when you took that one-way trip, it forced you into a situation where you had to problem solve every single moment of every single day, right? Where am I going to eat? How am I going to communicate? How am I going to get around? How am I going to keep myself safe? Where am I going to sleep, right? All those are problems. And so you just began this constant problem solving process, yes?
Yes, and I'll add to that. And here is an important fact. And I think one of the reasons why I love travel so much. Go back to my story about leaving my neighborhood school.
Yeah.
Then going to a school and being picked on and bullied, and I'll try to keep my language quite clean here, but
yeah, it's a family show.
Yeah, exactly. Then going back to my neighborhood school, and then all through 7 and 8 and into high school, everybody knew me as going to this special school, that there was something wrong with me. Yep. Now, when I started going overseas and meeting people, they weren't judging me based on what had happened to me in my school experience. They were judging me on my behavior, on my actions, on how I treated someone, how I spoke to them. It was like I could recreate myself, and I didn't have this stigma that had been attached to me from the public education system.
How interesting.
I had always been identified as someone very weird, or not weird, but different because of this learning disability. You know? So when I started traveling and meeting people and forming relationships, it was based on who I had made myself into, how I had worked on myself, and how I treated them.
Right.
Not on the past. Does that make sense?
It makes so much sense. And again, like, I'm thinking about so many kids, and again, parents, I want you to hear this. So many kids who are discouraged by their educational experience. Again, they feel dumb. They feel stupid. They feel like they're just never enough. Giving a chance to reboot. Now, you had your chance to reboot in by going to by traveling, which I would love for every kid to be able to do that. But there are other ways to reboot too. But the point is that you no longer, that person no longer has to carry the stigma that they had into this reboot environment. So if a child, you know, goes to another school and is labeled as ADHD or labeled as, you know, whatever, that's not a reboot. If you move to another part of the country or world, now you're talking a potential reboot. Of course, not every family can explore that. But the point of the importance of it is that when that child gets the chance to reboot, all of those shackles can fall away. And now that child can lean forward into an environment and be judged on the merits that matter, people. The merit that matters is your ability to relate to other people, your ability to problem solve, your ability to be kind and generous and loving. Those are the things that matter, and they're never evaluated or measured in a school environment. All the other things that don't matter are. So Mikkel got a chance to restart his life, and then you soared from here. So Mikkel, how long have you been traveling since 17?
I've been traveling for 21 years straight, nonstop. I have visited more than 100 countries. I've lived in 9 countries. I've circumnavigated the planet more than 400 times. I'm a best-selling author. I'm a public speaker. I do motivational speeches. I work in high-end tax planning for entrepreneurs and for high-net-worth individuals. I help people to relocate for tax-efficient manners, very high-level things. Right. I have lawyers who work for me. I have accountants who work for me.
But wait a
second. And I'm a high school dropout.
I was going to say, but you didn't. I mean, you must have gone and got your master's degree or something, right, in order to do these things, right? I mean, you must have gone into hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt to get your degree and then, right? So again, parents, I want you to hear this. Here's a young man. I can call him young man because I'm an old man. Here's a young man who found his way, found his passion, and then went deep at it and went deep into it. And then some years later, he's now able to take that passion, his experience of traveling like this. He's one of the few people in the world that have done it. And as a result, now he can sell that experience, sell that knowledge to high net worth individuals. And he's, you know, living an incredible life. But I want to go back to something, Mikkel. You were doing this not because you saw a job opportunity or a career in travel. Why were you doing this?
Because I loved it, because it spoke to me more than anything else in the whole wide world. And as my father had said when I was 17 years old, it was the greatest thing he ever did with his life. Yeah. And I agree with him 100%. I mean, travel and meeting people and exploring and learning about cultures and language and food and how regular people do regular things, 100% different than I do, is the most fascinating thing in the world to me. And I have never, ever, ever stopped learning or being hungry for knowledge or putting myself out there in any of this.
Well, and I think the other thing that, again, I touched on it a moment ago, but it forced you to problem solve. And to me, like, problem solving is the number one skill that any human has. That's the skill that separates us from animals, right? That we can problem solve on 1,000 different levels if we practice it. Now, again, parents, I want you to hear this for a moment. When your child goes to school, they are told what the goal is, what they're going to learn. They're told how they're going to learn it. They give, essentially, the school develops the plan. They're told when they're going to learn it. The child now has to learn it, and then the system evaluates the learning. So the child does no planning whatsoever, no problem solving in this process at all. Mikkel, again, with a very small budget, was traveling country to country, not speaking the language. Again, every day, every moment is a problem solving exercise. And I'm just thinking that that's just building that problem solving muscle within you. And as I've talked to a bunch of entrepreneurs on this journey, entrepreneurs are just that. They're just problem solvers. And they just keep problem solving, and they stumble on a value proposition that can earn opportunities. That's exactly kind of what it sounds like happened with you, right?
So yeah, absolutely. And talking about problem solving, I took 18 months and hitchhiked and backpacked through Central and South America in 2002, 2003, 2004. About 2003, 2004. So, I mean, I was hitchhiking in Belize and in Guatemala. I traveled through El Salvador and Honduras by myself. Like, yeah, that's a lot of problem solving. How do you do that? How do you figure that out as a kid by yourself? I mean, I don't know. I did.
I did. But it's something else, though. It also builds this incredible confidence. You could just drop in any country. Right now, you feel like you could drop in any country, and within a few hours, you've got dinner set up.
I know. Yeah. I mean, I've traveled all over Africa, in Asia. I've been to Iran and North Korea. I hiked with mountain gorillas. I've been to North Korea. I traveled with, I hiked from Uganda to the borders with the Democratic People's Republic of Congo and Rwanda to spend time with silverback mountain gorillas. I reckon I was, me and my small group were the only tourists on planet Earth that day to see mountain gorillas in their natural habitat.
No doubt. So, all right. So, but now the parents listening to this are going, oh my gosh, no way is my child going to do that, right? But this was a buildup.
But you don't start with stuff like that.
Exactly. I mean,
piece by piece, poco y poco.
Right. So he built it up, just like you learned language, just like you. Actually, let's pause for a moment, because you mentioned that you were dyslexic. That's why you're having trouble reading. Obviously, that didn't stop you. So how did you manage that? And what might you say to a child or a parent who has a child who is, struggling with dyslexia at age 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old?
I think the big thing that was able, why I was able to learn how to read, and side note, I'm a voracious reader now. I have a huge library with literally thousands of books. I read on average between 100 and 120 books every single year, and have done for close to 20 years straight.
Yeah.
I mean, I started to learn how to read by finding material that I actually found interesting, opposed to the material that was forced on me. I didn't care about the books that they wanted, but I did find books. I remember when I was in grade 5 and 6, when I really learned how to read, and that spoke to me.
Yes.
Now I read books on economics and business and tax and all these types of things every day. And I read on average probably 4 to 5 hours a day.
Yeah.
But I know you haven't really asked it, but for me, one of the main reasons for this, and what I believe the main reason is that creativity and that search for knowledge and for understanding the world, that passion, it wasn't beat out of me as a child the same way it was for, I think, a lot of other kids. Because I have many friends who went through high school, then university, and then a specialization. So they did probably 6 to 8 years in university. And I swear to God, in 99% of the cases, they have never read another book in their life. Yes. It was like they did the education period of their life, and then they did their life. No, I did my entire life, and I never stopped the desire to learn and to educate. Because let's not confuse education and school.
That's right.
Sometimes people think they're synonymous and they're not synonymous. They have nothing to do with one another, actually. Yeah. By me traveling and meeting people and going out there and putting myself in difficult situations, that was my education. That was my high school and my university, my bachelor's and my master's and my PhD.
Oh my God.
That's what I've done. I've done 20 PhDs in real life.
Yes. So again, so I think this is actually the most important thing that you have said, Mikhail. This is a really rich conversation, but this idea that, and I've talked to so many families who have a 23-year-old child laying on their couch who's just completely beaten down, has no curiosity left in him. And, yeah, you know, I keep asking the question, when did this start? And the answer is always, it started around, I don't know, eight or nine years old. It seems like he just started to disengage. And so for every parent that has a child that is, you see them starting to disengage, you got to act quickly, right? Because Mikhail's a young man who did not, like he said, did not have the curiosity and the desire to learn beaten out of him by years of forced study. He instead had a chance to ask the question, what do I really love? And that was travel. And now to sink his teeth into it big time. So as you know, I've got three teenagers at home, Mikhail, and so you're reminding me that you know, the things that I want for them, I got to be really careful that I'm not destroying the very thing that's going to cause them to be creative, a lifelong learner. Because if you are a lifelong learner, you're going to win. You will win. You're going to figure out how to manage your money. You're going to figure out how to manage your time. You're going to figure out how to, you know, engage and disengage from friends that are positive or negative. You're going to figure out the things that you love. That is what we are after as parents. And that is what you stumble into, Mikhail, and why I was so excited to have you on this show. I'm hoping that other parents can hear your story, can recognize that, man, we need to actually pull back from how we drive kids into an academic environment and allow them to learn the things that are of interest to them and then to discover and to stay curious. That's, I think you just put a real fine point on this conversation with that language, Mikhail.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really important to keep the creativity. I mean, my desire to learn and to figure things out and how it all works together.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still as curious today at 38 as I was when I was 17 and I started traveling.
Yeah.
Like, I still want to know what's around the corner, still want to talk to the next person. And I mean, yeah, I still like learning new languages. Like, I mean, 20 minutes before our conversation today, I got off a call with my private tutor. I have a private one-on-one tutor that I work with on Spanish. I work with her Monday to Friday, 5 days a week, and I pay her to just talk to me for an hour. And in 2 years, I went from pretty crummy Spanish to very fluid Spanish, where I can have 60-minute conversations nonstop. I can participate in group conversations. I get jokes. We are always playing around. Every day's conversation is completely different. This is from the kid who was told that I'll never be able to learn a second language because I have so much trouble with English.
So another couple fine points. Parents, be really careful of accepting the diagnoses that people heap on your child. Be super careful about that. Couple reasons. One, it changes you. You as the parent start saying, oh, my child can't. It's crap.
Correct.
Second one, it changes your child, or it might. It might cause them to say, well, maybe I shouldn't bother because I'm not smart enough. Super dangerous. I think, Mikhail, you're right. By you disengaging early, you didn't have these years and years and years of beatdown to the point where you're certain that you can't do anything. You would never have ventured out to travel in Europe on your own had you not had some inner confidence and sense that you could figure some things out. All right, let's kind of bring this to closure, because this is, again, this has been a great conversation. I want to reiterate some of the key points that you made so the parents can hear this and then adjust accordingly. The first is, if your child is not enjoying school, well, let me even back up. Separate their enjoyment of school into a joy of learning and a joy of social. And if you're hearing that they love the social, but not so much the learning, you got a problem. All right. The second one is,
I think that you have a problem on both sides, because I think the social can add an incredible amount of stress and affect everything else in the light in your
good.
Life.
Yeah, it's a good point. It also,
if your child is unhappy with the behavior and how they're being treated and how they're treating other people, because everything is always reciprocal. I mean, a lot of times I think that pulling a child out of an environment like that and having things where they don't have that external stress, because think about it. Your child is learning how to be an adult, not from adults, not from productive members of society and people who live an effective life. They're learning how to be an adult from children, from other kids who don't know how to be adults.
That's so right.
You got 32 kids or 30 kids all trying to figure things out. I mean, for me, it's too much. It's too much negative influence. I'm big in the homeschooling movement, and I think that there's so many positives. I think there are other alternatives. It doesn't have to be homeschooling, but I think that state-run schools are probably not the best option in most cases for kids.
Yeah. Well, and then you didn't even mention about the power of conformity, how your kid, even if they enjoy the social, and even let's assume that most of the interactions are positive, I think you could make the argument that's unlikely, frankly, but then now you're seeing a situation where your child is having to conform. They're not able to really explore who they are. And my language is who God made them to be. And if they're not exploring that, then they're really hiding it. And that to me is a real tragedy. That's one of the major tragedies of life.
Well, look back to my example before about trying to make friends in grades 4, 5, and 6. So even if a child wanted to be nice to me and thought that there was something special about me, they were told by the collective that, no, there's something wrong with him. So if you're nice to him, now there is something wrong with you as well. Your child might not be like me. Maybe they don't have that same type of learning disability or any type of stigma that you want to place, any type of label. But they might be pushed by others to treat someone else badly. Yeah. Think about that. I mean, think about what that's going to do 5 years, 10 years out with the conformity on that. I mean,
that's
scary. That's scary stuff.
It is really scary. It's really, and we all know this. I mean, anyone who's been in a traditionally structured school, we've seen it. We've probably participated in it, or we've felt the blows that have come from it. So, I mean, this is not actually that unusual what you're describing, and these are constant problems that are in every environment. You know, I'm reminded of the book Lord of the Flies, right? I mean, bunch of kids on an island together. Yeah, it's going to turn nasty pretty soon. So, okay, another couple key points he made were the importance of problem solving. So, putting himself in a situation where he is constantly problem solving, that builds a skill set that is, I think, one of the most important skill sets that a person can have in this 21st century. Things are moving so quickly. Change is happening so regularly that if you can't constantly problem solve, you're going to get stuck and you're going to get run over by the disruptions that are coming. Relationship, when he was traveling internationally, it's not about what you know. It's not about the facts and what grade you got on a test. It's about your ability to talk to somebody and to be kind to someone. And that is a universal skill. But it's never really rewarded, measured, encouraged, taught in a traditional educational environment. And the most important thing I'll probably put, and this will be the last point, he loved to learn about the things that he was interested in. And parents, I want you to remember that the state is deciding what your kids are learning. And the state is deciding when they're going to learn it, how they're going to learn it, through what tools they'll use. This is a real problem kind of dynamic. So he had a chance to find the things that he was interested in, and then he was off to the races. We have to try to figure out how to do that with our own kids so that they can then learn faster than anybody else because they're learning about the things of interest to them. And again, that's part of our work at the Education Game to help coach parents into how to do that. So, Mikhail, I'm just so excited. I'm just like running off at the mouth here. Any last comments for parents or any last thoughts that you'd like to leave here as we conclude?
Well, I think that one of the most important things that you need to understand about your kids is they have a decision in all of this. Mm-hmm. You need to listen to them because I know that you want the best for your child. I'm not going to question that, but your child probably wants the best for themselves as well. and they're smarter and more aware than you realize. Mm. So if they're acting out or if they're disengaging, to use Matt's language, I mean, there is probably a reason for that. Yeah. Now, they might not be able to articulate it in a way that you understand, but that doesn't mean that they don't feel it. That doesn't mean that they don't have reasons. It's difficult at that age to communicate these types of complex emotions.
Sure.
So try to be patient and try to include them in what is being done. There was no inclusion for me when I was a child in my education. Mm. I had to do this myself. I dropped out myself. This was not a family discussion. There wasn't anything like that. You just couldn't force me anymore. Now, I'm very proud of myself for doing this, but I think that most kids are not going to have that same type of courage to go through it.
Yeah.
So you have to be very sensitive and trust your child's judgment while they're going through this period in their life.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent points. And again, you know, part of the selfish benefits of me interviewing people like yourself is that it helps me become a better parent. And so as we conclude this call, I'm going to go downstairs, talk to my kids and try to remember to start to push or to allow more freedom of choice in their lives. I'm doing a lot better than I used to be. I'm a recovering tiger parent, Mikkel, surprisingly. I've come full circle. So this has been so, so great. I am so appreciative of your time, and I'm so interested in following your work. The Expat Money Show is your podcast, right? And give
Correct.
Me the name of the book again.
ExpatMoneyShow.com.
ExpatMoneyShow.com. And then the book is?
Expat Secrets, How to Pay Zero Taxes, Live Overseas, and Make Giant Piles of Money. Super humble title, I know. That's how I roll. Very humble guy.
Well, so, but Mikkel, is your Expat Money Show an opportunity for people who want to live abroad on a low budget or travel abroad on a low budget? Is that kind of your stick, or is it more for families that are trying to
move
abroad?
No, so what it is basically I help Americans and Canadians to move overseas. My podcast, The Expat Money Show, is long format interview content. I've had people like Grant Cardone and Richard Mayberry and all kinds of super famous people. When we talk about a lot of the financial and entrepreneurial topics for living overseas, we talk about insurance, we talk about medical, we talk about housing, we talk about taxes, we talk about building a business, any type of things. If you don't like what is happening in your country, if you want a reset for your family, becoming an expat, living in another country can be a fantastic opportunity to bring you and your family, you and your kids closer together.
Wow.
Now, I love the education because a lot of the questions that people have is, well, what am I going to do with my kids when they live overseas? So we have a ton of episodes on education. We have homeschooling, we have online programs, we have international schools, we have programs like episodes on all of these different types of options that are out there.
Yeah.
And by living overseas, you can do it in, you can have a higher standard of living at a lower cost of living. You can have more connections. There's no keeping up with the Joneses when living overseas, and there's just so many benefits. So I'm really passionate about it. I talk about it, and I try to help as many people as possible to accomplish this.
Fantastic. And I know that you also have a young daughter, and so I also see the beauty of exposing a child to multiple different cultures as they're growing up. You know, as this world has gotten so small, like, we really have to embrace this idea that we're one being, we're one creature, we're one society now, and how you can move through that is actually another potential superpower. I'm sure your daughter's going to be very skilled at maneuvering.
I'll give you one final point just to show that I really live this life.
Yeah.
I'm Canadian with Danish heritage. My wife is from mainland China. Mm-hmm. I met her in Germany. We got married in Africa. My daughter was born in Abu Dhabi. Now we live in Panama full time, except for the next 4 months, we're living in Brazil because we're about to give birth to my second child. I'm having a son, and my son will be born in Brazil and will be a Brazilian citizen.
Holy smokes.
So in my house, at every day, we speak English, Spanish, and Chinese around the dinner table. And now we're learning Portuguese as well because we live in Brazil. So there's always three languages. Now it'll be a fourth language as well. My wife also speaks Korean, so it's a very international family,
yes.
And we've My daughter's 5 years old. She's been to 13 countries.
Yeah.
And yeah, speaks three languages now. So
this is, so parents, you're looking at the future. This is, yeah, this is what we can aspire towards, but it's going to require a really, really good plan. And so, Mikhail, thank you so much for coming on The Education Game. This has been a terrific conversation. I've actually encouraged a couple of friends to go to your site and learn already, because they've been having conversations about moving abroad. I definitely will stay in touch. I really appreciate your time today.
Pleasure's all mine. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, take care of yourself. Thanks for listening, parents. I hope that this was useful, that it started to give you a bit more of an indication of how learning is shifting and the things that you as a parent need to be upskilled about. That's what we're about here in The Education Game. So we're thankful that you were here. Again, hopefully it was helpful to you. Remember, you can call us to ask us questions free of charge about your family and your child's educational plan and learning journey. Go to our website at theeducationgame.com/contact. Click on the button there and schedule a time for us to have a conversation. Free of charge, completely free of charge. And it's just a service that we provide. It's underwritten by supporters. So thank you for those supporters as well. Hope this was helpful. Looking forward to seeing you next time on the Education Game podcast. Take care.